Okay,
we're back. So I got married.
Yes, that's where we're leaving off. Go ahead, yes.
And Steve did graduate work at Penn State, and they didn't have a school of social work. So, you know, back in those days, you just followed where your husband went.
Yeah.
And that led us to the U.S. Army. And he was stationed at the Manned Spacecraft Center for 3 years. And this was during Vietnam.
Wow.
So I worked at the, volunteered at the, they had a like a thrift shop on the airbase. And so that was what I did along with having a child.
Yes.
And then when we moved to Minnesota, I started doing volunteer work at YES, and one of the guy that was the executive director suggested that maybe I'd like to take some courses at United, and that's how I got out to United.
Really? What is YES?
Youth Emergency Service. It was a telephone hotline.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Fascinating. Okay. And then when you went to United, just to finish this off, did you know at that time you were going to be a pastor?
No, I figured I'd go into counseling and work in a, you know, church-related setting.
Mm-hmm. And did you go into the ordained ministry from United right after you graduated then? Okay.
But in the meantime, I figured out that I could be a pastor. Yeah. I didn't have any role models, you know.
Yeah.
But there were women when I got to seminary that were actually out doing internships and doing ministry. So I realized, oh, I could do this.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. And so glad you did, Kathy. So talking about the reimagining community, you played a central role in this. Mm-hmm. So if you could talk some about how you first got involved and what role you played in the reimagining community.
Well, we had a committee to implement the Ecumenical Decade for Women from the World Council of Churches. And the reimagining event grew out of the planning that we were doing around that.
When you say we, who is that again?
Well, whoever was on this committee. Sally Hill was the staff person.
Yeah.
I don't know who all.
Yeah.
It's just a blur of faces.
Sure.
Mary Gates was probably involved in that.
How did you get on the committee?
Well, I had, I was on the board of the Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches, and I had been pretty heavily involved there. I had served on the search committee that that brought Gary Ryerson as the executive director, and I was also on the search committee for the Minnesota Council of Churches when Peg Chamberlain was hired.
Yeah.
So I was pretty involved ecumenically.
Yes, yeah.
And I also chaired the council at some point, but I'm not remembering the dates for that. So.
Not surprising. It's all been a long time.
Yeah.
What do you remember about that process of planning the Reimagining Conference? What was that like?
Of planning the conference?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was very collaborative. And there had been a retreat, which I was not at, where the idea for reimagining came out of that. Sally Hill, Marianne Lundy, Jerry Smith, maybe, from the University of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
There were a number of women who had been on this committee that were at that retreat. And it was out of that the start of the planning came forth. And then someplace along the line they asked me to chair and Mary Kay to be vice chair, and we quickly decided that every committee would have both a clergy person and a lay person as co-chairs.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
So. Everything that we did had clergy and lay.
Okay, because at that point Mary Kay was lay.
Mary Kay was lay.
That's right, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And So we did the planning.
How was it being co-chair?
Well, it worked out just fine. Mary Kay and I got along just well. And we must have started planning in the late 80s,
wow.
89 maybe?
Yeah.
Or 90, maybe 90. And I took a year off someplace along the line.
Wow.
I took time off. I don't know if it was a full year. And the planning went on.
Yeah.
And then Mary Kay started seminary, and she took time off. So it just kept going.
Yes. From what I've heard, it really grew, the plans for the conference. It started mm-hmm. out and it kept getting bigger. Is that
right.
what you
mm-hmm.
recall? And mm-hmm. what did that feel like?
Well, some of it was the result of the money that we got from the Presbyterian Church. Now, I don't know. Marianne and Sally were instrumental in getting that money. There was a large capital campaign that they were doing, fundraising campaign, and the Ecumenical Decade had been targeted as the recipient of some of that money, and so that's where. And once we got those funding, I think that's when it moved to be a much more expansive event.
Yeah.
And I think the movement to become bigger happened during that period of time that I was away. But included in that was to have it be, since it was part of the World Council of Churches, to really capitalize on the Ecumenical Decade for Churches in Solidarity with Women
mm-hmm.
Worldwide. And that's when it became international. And then, of course, we had to deal with all the getting scholarships and getting people here from around the world.
It was an amazing undertaking. It really mm-hmm. is.
Yeah,
really.
Well, it's a lot of credit goes to Sally for kind of spearheading this.
Yeah, yes.
And she was the staff person, so she had the time to do the work that needed to be done.
Yeah. I've read your essay in Remembering Reimagining, mm-hmm. but if you could say some about what that 93 conference, what that experience was like for you.
Well, I think I said that I attended a totally different
yes.
conference than everybody else.
You did.
Because we were, from the get-go of the event, we were concerned with making sure that registration was flowing and that, you know, the rooms were set up and all of sort of the administrative kinds of things that go into running a big conference. I mean, there were, what,
over 2,000, yes.
Mm-hmm. Women and some men that were there. And as the weekend unfolded, there were various other kinds of things that were going on behind the scenes that we needed to care for and think about.
Yeah.
So,
do you remember what any of those in particular that stand that stood out?
Well, the biggest one was a desire by the lesbian women to have some words and time on the podium, which had not been planned, of course.
Yeah.
And and so we had to call a meeting of the coordinating, of the planning team. I don't remember what we called ourselves. Maybe it was coordinating council, but I think that came later mm-hmm. after we established the community, to talk about what that impact would be.
Mm. Was that a difficult decision?
It was.
Mm-hmm.
Because we knew there were people from the various conservative branches of our respective denominations that were mm. present and were wanting to find negative things about what we were doing.
Mm-hmm. So. But decided to go ahead with it anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Decided that we probably couldn't stop it. That might not be exactly true, but
Yeah.
But they did want to have our approval.
Yes.
To do that.
Yeah. You were able to attend probably some of the plenary sessions. That may have
right.
been about it. Are there any moments for you? I know it's been a while, but any moments that particularly stand out for you?
Well, for almost all of the liturgy that we did, we all had roles. Mary Kay and I had roles. So, and other people on the committee had roles. So we were actually leading the worship and the experience. I remember Jan Love's presentation and talking about healing from the outside. Until the outside was healed, the inside never would be healed, which was an image that I've carried with me for a long time.
Could you just say a little bit about why that image really strikes you?
Well, one of the things that we struggled with as a committee and planning committee was the fact that we were all white women.
Yes.
Or predominantly white women. And how do we have participation from and hear other voices? And I think that influenced our selection of speakers as we went along. So, but I've always had, well, as I said, I was going to go to the West Side Christian Parish and heal the world or something. but I've always had a commitment to social justice and thinking about marginalized. And that just really struck me that the flow of power was different, that the power needed to go out to heal the margins before we could really all live centered lives. So.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask a question. When you talked about leading the liturgy, I'm just wondering, you know, you had been involved in planning and everything. Do you remember what it was like to be up there and leading the liturgy? Was it what you anticipated? How did it feel to be doing that?
Well, it was pretty exhilarating. And it was, Madeline Soon had it very well scripted.
Mm.
So, you know, all we needed to do was... follow what was written. And it was scripted and choreographed. I mean, it was not just a static liturgy. We were in different places around the room.
Well, should we talk about the backlash?
Okay.
Did that affect, first of all, did it affect you personally?
Only in so far as I was named in a number of the publications from Good News.
Yeah.
And it continued. I mean, it wasn't just the one-shot deal or whatever. It, you know, every once in a while when they needed to raise money. Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah. How did you deal with that?
Oh, I just ignored it.
But
I was far enough away removed. And in our system, you know, you're appointed.
Right.
And they can't take your job away from you.
Mm-hmm.
Which gave a lot of United Methodist women a lot of security.
Right.
So.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
How did you react to what was happening to other people or the whole situation?
Well, just, I remember thinking, you got to be kidding.
Really, yeah.
You know, where is this coming from? I mean, it's kind of like today, the Donald Trump folks, you got to be kidding.
Yeah.
This is craziness. But it's the same people, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. So you hadn't anticipated that it would be like this?
Mm-mm. No, I don't think any of us. We knew that we might get a little flack, but never to the extent that 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 it happened. Back to your question about what do you remember from the conference?
Yeah.
I can't say her name. I don't know whether she was Korean or Chinese.
Chok Yong Kyung or
yes.
Kwak Pulon?
No,
Chok Yong Kyung.
And bite the apple.
Yes.
And so I have a couple of apples that still sit on my desk.
Do you?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What about that was so powerful to you?
Well, it was just being audacious.
Yeah.
And doing what needed to be done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that it would be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to ask, because for just a minute, you know, there was Sophia, there was the mm-hmm. milk and honey ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember any particular reactions to that when it occurred, or that?
When it occurred?
Yeah, or afterwards, or?
Well, afterwards, the conservatives glommed onto the milk and honey, saying this was communion. Well, we had worked so hard not to have it be communion, because we knew that that what we were planning, not everybody would be able to feel comfortable in taking communion. And so we designed a ritual that we felt would be inclusive of all denominations. And it's very scripturally based in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think we anticipated that might raise some hackles along the way,
mm-hmm.
but maybe more so for the theologians that were there than those of us that were doing sort of the administrative kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. How do you account for the backlash?
Well, I think that people fear change. And there were lots of different images of God presented, different understandings of church, challenging the institutional church as it existed then and exists now. In various denominations, there were at that time rumblings of women who wanted to be heard, and so this became a place where that voice could come together mm-hmm. and be strong,
mm-hmm.
and that was very threatening.
Mm-hmm.
And people who had not done their biblical work didn't understand Sophia, didn't understand the long concept of, well, the feminine part of God had been written out of theology. And even though it was there, biblically, it had been interpreted in such a way that it was all masculine.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was very threatening
mm-hmm.
to the traditionalists. It's still threatening.
Mm-hmm.
Language is an interesting piece, and I think we've gone way back.
Mm.
Taken lots of steps backwards in the use of inclusive language,
mm-hmm.
even for people. I mean, that's the other piece that has
mm-hmm.
been challenging. So, mm-hmm. So the climate was just ready to have people speak out and be upset about what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Were you involved in the formation of the community after mm-hmm. the backlash? Mm-hmm. I thought you were. Could
yeah.
you say about how that happened? How was that decision made?
Well, it wasn't too long after the conference was over, and we may have already set a meeting to come together to debrief what happened and to do an evaluation.
Mm.
We kept meeting because the stories kept coming in. And we decided, it was a joint decision, that we needed to be there to support the women, especially the women that were losing their jobs
mm-hmm.
and were being so amazingly challenged by their denominations.
When you said stories coming in, is that the kind of stories you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what kind of role did you play then after the committee was formed?
Mary Kay and I continued to chair the coordinating council. That may have been the name of the planning team. Boy, after all these years, you just forget.
I know.
As you get older, you forget. But anyway, and it just seemed logical that we would continue in leadership. We were also clear that we weren't going to do it, that leadership needed to be shared. Mm. That was one of the fundamental tenets that we had as we set up the planning team, that this was a coordinated event. And I thought that we probably did call ourselves a coordinating council. So we divided up the tasks that needed to be done, getting a 501c3 and getting the state incorporation and doing the various steps financially that needed to be set up. And, and Nancy and Myrna King and Pam Joran were all part of the founding group. Sally, of course.
So. And the publication started very early on.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was Nancy and Pam.
Yeah, yeah.
That did the hit. So.
How long did you stay involved in the community? Do you remember?
Well, I don't know. I was thinking about that as I was looking at your questions. I don't remember. It would have been probably 2 to 3 years, maybe.
Yeah.
And then I think the demands of the local church were such that I needed to step away.
Sure.
And then in 97, I was appointed as a district superintendent, and our son became quite ill and died. Mm-hmm. So there was all that going on in 97.
Sure.
So some of the events prior to that, I think I had moved away from reimagining. So
sure.
when we were talking earlier and I said I don't remember how many conferences there were, I know that Mary Kay and I had leadership, speaking kinds of parts in the second one.
Mm.
Worked with Rita Nakashima Brock a lot on that second one.
Mm.
And then it all becomes fuzzy.
Yes.
I know that the one that they did on power.
Yeah.
And I don't know what year that was, but anyway.
Offhand, I don't either.
I was just there.
Yes.
And was it Letty Russell or?
Yes.
Was she the speaker?
Yes.
And Alice Walker's daughter, I think.
Rebecca Walker.
Right. And it was so clear that Letty Russell had not moved on. Mm. And that the world had moved on, even in that short period of time. And she couldn't hear what...
Could it possibly be Mary Daly that you're thinking about?
Maybe it was Mary Daly.
Yeah, because it was Mary Daly and Rebecca Walker who were together.
Okay,
yes,
that,
yeah.
Or Mary Daly.
Yes,
whatever.
Yes.
One of the pioneers.
Yes.
Right. And, yeah, because Letty Russell did move on. She wrote other books after that.
Right.
Well, Mary Daly did too. But it was clear in the presentations that Mary could not relate to what she was saying.
That's right.
And that was an eye-opener for me to say, you need to pay attention to what other generations bring to the table.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't necessarily need to be at the table anymore. You can receive the gifts that they bring, but your voice needs to be a different voice.
Mm.
And I think that was one of the, and this was all around power and understanding power. And that, I'm sure, was as I was moving into being a superintendent, or was already one, where my power had changed.
Yes.
and how do you listen to different people and different voices?
Fascinating. Wow, that is great. Talking about the community, kind of having you reflect mm-hmm. on it, which you're already doing, which is great. How would you define reimagining?
Well, it was, I'm thinking back to our discussion around the word reimagining, mm-hmm. because that word was not solidified at that retreat. And we talked about whether it was re-imaging or reimagining. Mm. And as I'm remembering my feelings or my thinking about this, or maybe it was group thinking about this, that we weren't necessarily re-imaging that which was, but reimagining that which could be. Mm. And I think that is still, even as we've been meeting as a small group to do this archive mm-hmm. work and so forth, it is for the future. How do we continue to reimagine that it's not a re-image, it's a reimagining that which can come forth.
Yes.
So that's sort of what I understand reimagining to be.
Mm-hmm. That is great.
And that's why I think we continued after the backlash, that we weren't going to go back to the same image and re-image it in a lesser way,
yeah.
that we were going to continue to reimagining. So reimagining actually became a verb.
Huh. Yes.
That we are reimagining. We're not static.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think you've kind of hinted at this, and it's been good. How would you say that feminist theology affected the structure and functioning of the community?
Well, I think as part of this reimagining, that we were going to do structure differently. That's why we had lay and clergy co-chairs for all the committees. We had a discussion this morning about we've never voted on anything.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
Because we worked on a consensus model.
Yes.
Which often took a while to get to consensus. We understood the value of all the voices around the table, so we spent extensive time checking in, and then we did our work. And for those people that were frustrated with that, there were people along the way who came in and came out of the committee.
Yeah.
One person that will go nameless came in, was recruited to do some work, and she said she was so upset that we spent all this time doing the checking in time, and she said you could be so much more efficient if you just get down to work. And I think we just learned to live together in community and to value where each person was. And then we got down to work. And
yeah.
then the work went a lot easier. And if we're working on a consensus model, because we knew what some of the issues were that people were dealing with, it made it easier to engage in conversation, and that the relationship was much richer and stronger. And I think that is one of the gifts that women bring, that feminist theology is about relationships. God's relationship with us, our relationship with God, that it is a more relational experience than God telling us what to do or whatever. So,
yes, yes. Actually, could you describe what, I know what you mean by check-in, but maybe you could explain that.
Okay. As we gathered at our meeting times, we would go around the table and just share what was going on with each of us
mm-hmm.
and how our families were, what was impacting our lives. So yeah. That's what I mean by checking in.
Yeah, yes, exactly. What challenges were faced by the community during its, while it was in existence? And how did the community address them?
I think funding was an issue, although I think we still were funded by the part of the Tri-Council Coordinating Committee, which was the Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches, the St. Paul Area Council of Churches, and Minnesota Council of Churches. I think we probably got money out of the subscriptions to the journal.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. But I think that some of the challenges are what was next. How long do we keep doing this? Is it finite or is it ongoing? Challenges over, I know we hired a staff person finally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not remembering, but it was sort of the challenges were primarily, or from my perspective, were organizational,
yeah,
not necessarily theological. The theology was going on out here. People were writing for the journal and submitting stuff to the journal and then discussion from that. But the from the community, the coordinating council perspective, it was primarily administrative, organizational. And we knew that there were groups like the group that you're in that continued to meet, and some that still continue to meet.
Mm. The small groups.
Small groups,
yes,
right.
Yes, yes.
And we formed a group at Hamlin Church when I was pastor there, and I don't think that group continues to meet,
mm.
But it did after I left, so I met for breakfast.
Mm-hmm. So it would have been several years that they met.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't leave there until 97.
So. Okay, yeah, and so it was a few.
It lasted after that. So.
Sure, yeah. As you think back about it, what aspects of reimagining were most significant to you and why?
Hmm. Well, Well, it's on several levels. One, by being chair and working through in a different way of working, I gained a lot of skill in how to work collaboratively.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a gift that I have. And I have administrative gifts, so that's where I could bring my gifts. I think of Mary Gates, who always has something to sell.
Yes.
And that was her gift.
It was.
And she just, she did just such a wonderful job of having stuff for people to buy.
Yes.
And just, so everybody, that was the other piece, learning, is that you don't have to do it all yourself. That various people bring their gifts to the table, and Suicide Martin, you know, came in that year that I was gone, and just did the liturgy, and I got back, and there it was. Oh my gosh!
Wow!
You know, so to trust the gifts of other women, mm-hmm. and the power that comes from that. Mm-hmm. And then to see it played out at the event and continue to play out,
mm-hmm.
that was one of the highlights.
Mm. Mm. That is great.
I think another one, after the conference, and people like Marianne Lundy and Jean Audrey Powers and Joyce Sewell and some of these women that did not cave into the forces of tradition and continue to stand up for what they believed was right. That served as a great witness. Was it Rita that got interviewed on one of the TV shows?
Mm-hmm.
You know, powerful. The voices of women were not going to be lost.
Mm-hmm.
And that is important.
Did your involvement in Reimagining change your perspective on feminist theology or the church? And if so, how?
Well, my call to ministry was to change the church. Seriously.
Yeah. Say some more about that, Kathy. That's interesting.
Well, I've just always had an understanding that that's what my call was to change the church. I didn't know how that was going to happen or what was going to happen, but that's what my call was. My call came after during an experience of in Illinois. I was raised Presbyterian. Didn't have church camps like they do in Minnesota, where you went to camp. Camp. I did my camping through the Girl Scouts, but they would have youth gatherings for youth at college campuses, at Monmouth College. And so my call came in the experience at one of these events at Monmouth.
Mm.
And my senior year in high school, the youth were to put on the church service, and the pastor wouldn't let me preach because I'd been into him and talked to him about how, well, I was an outspoken young woman. And so he asked my best friend at church to preach the sermon. So she and I wrote the sermon. So all the things that I wanted to change about the church back then, I don't know what it was, got incorporated into it anyway.
Okay, I love that story.
But that sense of call to change the church has been part and parcel of my understanding of theology and what I was to do in the church, and that's why I'm running again for judicial council, is that thanks to Bishop O, who preached a sermon at United on Methodist days, and he talked about call, and I was sitting there and thinking, oh, this is good, students need to hear that, and then all of a sudden it was like, and you do too. So I had already scheduled a meeting with him after lunch, after that, on that Methodist days, because his schedule was, and we had a couple of other things that we needed to talk about. And I said, well, you know, I told you that I didn't want to run for judicial council. After your sermon, I've changed my mind. And they had already sent the list of names into the Council of Bishops. The College of Bishops had sent it into the Council of Bishops.
Oh.
And I said, is it too late? And he said, oh, it's never too late. And so he turned my name in, and John Hopkins contacted me and said, good.
Oh, that is...
We have your name down. It'll be on the list. So.
You're still hearing and answering the call.
Yeah.
So when you talk about changing the church, can you say a little bit more about what that has meant to you in different times or in different ways?
Well, I think what I was talking about before, about being able to listen to the various voices, has has been important to me as I was a superintendent, but also in the work that I did at the general church level, which was actually doing some restructured work on the General Council of Ministries. And being able to put all the pieces together into something new.
Yeah. And did reimagining relate to that in some way?
Well, I was, I was on, elected to the General Council on Ministry starting in 1992, so it was 92 through 2000.
Uh-huh.
And so in 92 is when we first began talking about restructuring the church. And so a lot of the new stuff that I had been hearing through reimagining and doing through reimagining, then I was able to take to the general church level and have that be open to hearing new things and working with people in new ways.
Mm-hmm. Are there kind of specific things that you're thinking of?
Oh, gosh. Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, there are lots of, there's was learning about Margaret Wheatley's work and leadership in the new science, Glenda O. Yang around what do they call that? fractals and how pieces fit together and adaptive learning, which was much later, but so to be open, I think the reimagining piece laid the groundwork to reimagine something new and that it could be something new, not just tinkering with the old,
yes.
Which is what we're still doing.
Yes. Okay. That makes sense, yeah.
And that's some of the thing that really challenges me on the Judicial Council, because you have this Book of Discipline that is very state, and the Constitution, and that's what you work out of.
Mm.
And so how is it that you bring the newness out of something that is pretty static? So,
quite a job.
Right, and to be focused rather than thinking globally.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge of the Judicial Council. So.
Sure, yeah. What specific contributions do you think reimagining made to Christian theology or liturgy?
Well, liturgically, I think it opened up new worlds of how to do liturgy, that it's not just static, that you can be faithful to the tradition and still do it in a new way. And you can gather in new ways. So they criticized the Good News folk and the layman magazine or whatever from the Presbyterian Church, that we gathered around tables and that we had coloring and that we sang chants and probably, well, it would have been in 1996, I think. A number of us were at the National Leadership Training for Annual Conference Leadership. Well, we came in and we were all sitting around tables. And then they started singing some of the chants from Reimagining.
Really?
I don't think people knew, but it was Mary Gates and Jean Justice and... I don't know. There were a number of us who had been active participants on the Reimagining Council or part of Reimagining sitting going, really?
So they weren't, do you know who planned that?
I don't know. It might have been Marcia McPhee looking back at it, but
It wasn't these reimagining people sitting there.
No, we were sitting attending. Here we are. Then we walked in and we were sitting at a table. We said, oh, really? And there's paper on these tables.
No. And this is a planning for the Minnesota Annual Conference.
No, this is for the General Church.
For the General Church. Really? Yeah. The General Conference. Wow.
This is, all the boards and agencies had the leadership from each annual conference come to figure out what they were supposed to do for the next quadrennium.
That's amazing.
And we just looked at each other and started laughing.
I bet you did.
You know, after all of the crap that we had been getting around these things, that you're sort of the mechanical kinds of things
yes.
that we did, and I was like, oh, really? So back to the question about theology.
Yeah.
So what we did has become mainstream. And the other piece that I think has happened is that women's voices are listened to, and it mm-hmm. gave voice to women doing theology.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the women that were presenters are still significant voices today.
Mm-hmm.
And new people have come along behind.
Mm-hmm. Now, earlier you said you feel like we've gone maybe backwards on inclusive language. So
I think we have.
So in some ways, some of it has gone forward and other parts
right.
have not.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, Elaine Pagel's work, I think she came after reimagining. A lot of the women who were speaking, who were writing and teaching prior to reimagining, gained a different voice because of reimagining.
Do you think that voice was heard, or is it heard in the churches?
Probably not.
Yeah.
And when people talk about being spiritual and not religious, that's who was at that conference, were the women that are spiritual. Denominations really didn't matter. Mm-hmm. It was experiencing the Spirit in a new way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And allowing the Spirit to be present in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reimagining groups carried that on. I think today the phenomena of reading groups is a continuation of that Spirit kind of work in a new way.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where you're moving toward the forward, which is to the future, excuse me. So what do you think is the greatest legacy of reimagining today?
I'm somewhat surprised at the response that you're getting in the work that you're doing, that it's still out there. Because all of us around that table have kind of moved on. We're not stuck back in 1993.
Yeah.
We're wanting to say it was important and it needs to be archived. The experience that I had with Rebecca Coleman, is that her name?
Monica
Coleman,
mm-hmm.
Who got excited when she found out that I had been co-chair. She said, "Where is it? We need to find it." She was asking, "Where is the research? It needs to be accessible to current scholars."
Yes.
And so I think that's the legacy that we continue to bring forward.
Yes.
And the work that you're doing, it's mm-hmm. going to take a huge quantum leap in that
mm-hmm.
in that arena.
Mm-hmm. So. With a lot of support, which is wonderful. Yeah. finishing up here, but what would reimagine, or what should reimagining mean today? What does it mean to reimagine?
Well, I think it's back to that concept of reimagining as a verb that continues going forward, and I think that's the gift that we give the future. Mm-hmm. And we know that nothing is static, and we can't go back, even though there are people that want to in the political arena these days. We just can't go back to what was past. We have to move forward, and I think that's God pulling us forward into the new future. God's not static. God is always active, bringing something new,
yeah.
And that's what it's all about. That's what makes life exciting.
Exactly. I have one very specific question.
Okay.
You know, we're working on this reimagining website, mm-hmm. and I'd love to hear if you have any thoughts about what would be good to include, or who we should target, who would benefit from it. Any thoughts you have about that website?
Well, I think there needs to be a lot of links to the work that you're doing right now, and to authors.
Mm-hmm.
How you get people to Google reimagining and find out is a challenge that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And it may mean that we may need to do some significant fundraising in order to put ads on other people's websites
mm-hmm.
for reimagining.
Mm-hmm. When you said links to authors, I just want to be clear. Which authors were you thinking of?
Whoever's writing good stuff
these
days.
Okay, yes. So current things. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, as in all fields, there's new things being discovered, new ways of thinking.
Yeah.
And there's so much that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was listening this morning to fundraising on NPR, and Carrie Miller was talking about the black hole.
I was hearing that too.
I'm thinking, I don't know anything about this. But yet, it's all of God. So, you know, I don't know something. But who has time?
Yes, yes.
But that's why you listen to NPR. I mean, I could go on and do an ad for them or something.
And I join in.
Yeah.
I was listening to the same thing.
Yeah.
Finally, this has been wonderful, Kathy. Is there anything that we haven't discussed that you would like to talk about, you'd like to include?
Oh, I don't think so. It's sad to have lost people like Nancy Bernanke and Sally Hill and who's the woman that just died?
Joe Ringenberg.
Because they were such an important part of what reimagining was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good to think about how to bring this to the next generation,
mm-hmm.
especially in this day of divisiveness that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Thank you. That's wonderful. Thank you.